It is noon on a Thursday. It is the late spring, where the days are starting to pulse with a summer-like heat. This small desert town is quiet with the heat. People are silently eating their lunches in the at least somewhat cooler dark interiors of their homes. The village school children are not playing outside. It feels too hot. There is a visible, wavy haze of heat in the air, making the blue of the sky look unreal. It is, in case you've somehow missed this, hot. From the outer fringe of the village's row of small plastered houses walks a woman who is intent upon the town's opposite edge. She carries two large buckets held by rope handles. The shawl of her cloak is pulled all the way up. Her head is bowed, not so much with the weight of the buckets, but again, with the heat of the day. Her sandal steps crunch over the dry, crusty way that runs from her house to the main well. She moves swiftly, wanting to get this over with. As is the case on a Thursday, when the weather is unseasonably warm, when you are in the middle of running errands that you don't particularly want to be doing, this woman is thinking of nothing in particular. She is simply making her way through the silence of the town. If she were thinking of anything, however, and this is going to be me just guessing, just so you know, it might have been along one of the following lines, in a sort of ascending order. That, man, what a pain it is to keep food on the table, water in the kitchen. Half of each day is just eating and drinking and keeping going. That, wouldn't it be nice if for once a week or even just a day could go her way, that she could have the feeling of just taking a breath? That, and here her head hangs noticeably, wouldn't it be lovely to be truly loved for the rest of your life? Actually carefully cared for by a man who really valued her? That, what if the people seeing her shuffling through the streets right now didn't view her through the lens of her so many mistakes? Or for that matter, what if the same were true about God? Even better, what if he actually knew her, cared, wanted to know her story a little more? But again, it's actually only a Thursday. It's hot. She's in the middle of running errands. So at the very most, those sorts of thoughts are only running through her unconscious as something like, call it subtext. Unthought thoughts behind thoughts. The kinds of thoughts you're feeling without knowing why you're feeling the way you do when, turning the final corner, she sees what she does not want to see. A stranger. A traveler, not a Samaritan, a Jew. Sitting on the edge of her well, looking almost as if he's been waiting for her. She pauses in the shade of a palm tree. She considers what to do, feeling the way she's feeling. She doesn't particularly want to have to interact with a stranger, regardless of who he is, much the same way we all feel when we're busy with our own little busynesses. Well, finally, though, she takes a deep breath, lets it out, walks out of the shade of the palm toward the glaring heat of the well ground. The man doesn't even rise to greet her. Now, friends, without reading to you the entirety of John 4, from which I was just imagining this scenario, I want you to consider, and perhaps you want to look at your own Bible to reacquaint yourself with that chapter, I want you to consider from her point of view the fundamental thing that begins happening in her heart the moment these two start talking. Contact. Jesus says, Would you mind getting me a drink? Context. Actually, it's I who would like to give you water, he says. Context within context, Jesus says to her. The water I give is eternal life. Interestingly, then, the lack of condemnation. I already know you've had 5 husbands. Then the new covenant, when he says, it's time now to worship God freely in spirit and truth. Because sitting on the edge of that well, it's the Christ. And I love the conclusion of their conversation when Jesus says, the one speaking to you is, I am. And by the way, just so you know, that's actually what he says, ego eimi. He speaks the name of God to this woman in declaring himself to be, in fact, the Christ. So let's say that conversation, the whole thing, at that well, I don't know, lasts maybe 10 minutes. Well, what has the heart of this woman heard from God? That heavenly provision is on offer. That the offer is not only provision, but everlasting life. That she is seen and known, and it would seem loved. That the heart of this one has not come unto the well in order to judge her, but to see her and to set her free. That, wait a minute, if this is God, sitting in the hot sun, perched on the edge of her village's well, seemingly having waited for her, well then, he is friendly, lovely, loving. I would say, friends, no wonder she then drops her bucket and runs off to shout to everyone in the town, is this the Messiah? And personally, I love his disciples returning with food right about then, seeing her drop her buckets, run off, shouting, then probably asking Jesus something like, what was that? In fact, listen to one of those disciples who was there on that day, decades later, reflecting on moments such as this one. Simon Peter writes, God has, by his own action, given us everything that is necessary for living the truly good life, in allowing us to know the one who has called us to him through his own glorious goodness. It is through him that God's greatest and most precious promises have become available to us men, making it possible for you to escape the inevitable disintegration that sin produces in the world and to share in God's essential nature. That's in the opening of 2 Peter 1. I have been thinking almost all this last week about something my dear friend Clara brought up last Sunday at Anchor. The question of, if the goal is proximity to Jesus, well, then what? How? I've been thinking about how she asked it all week long. And it occurred to me, I think this Tuesday morning, that this Samaritan woman's experience tells us so much of the whole story. Because just a moment ago, when I introduced you to this woman we know as the woman at the well, I told you what might have been her unconscious senses of her own deficiencies, based upon the conversation that we do see ensuing with Jesus. Well, now I want to consider the opposite. Based upon her initial responses to Jesus, what are, in her mind, her proficiencies, those maybe personal survival skills she uses to defend herself, even to deflect him? I think there's 4. Pragmatism. She says to him, you have nothing to draw up water with. Then skepticism. Are you saying you're greater than our father Jacob? Then sarcasm. Oh, yes, yeah, give me some of this living water so I don't have to keep coming back. And then her, I'll call it, philosophical religious ideology. You Jews claim worship must happen in Jerusalem, but we worship here. My friends, I think we all do this, even knowing Jesus. We hedge against the unknown by being ultra pragmatic. We try to stave off potential disappointment by giving in to skepticism. We try not to get too serious about anything by indulging in sarcasm, and we put up ideological walls in order to define what's in, what's out, and frankly, who's in, who's out. Well, listen to the bare bones of 2 Peter 1 again. The Father has given us the good life in giving us Jesus. The Father shows His glory and goodness in showing us Jesus. The Father's every promise is available, fulfilled, in fact, in Jesus. And the Father is inviting us to share His nature by sharing our lives with Jesus. When that woman was viewing her day as just another day in her life to get through, she was doing what we do on most of our days. But when it dawned on her that right in the middle of a Thursday, she was intimately connecting with God, everything changed. Everything. Her pragmatisms, skepticism, sarcasms, and ideologies all dissolved. Her thoughts about her everyday issues, the stories she'd been telling herself, her sense of being unlovable, all gone. That day became the day. And I would submit to you that that's the answer to my friend Clara's question. If proximity to Jesus is everything, then what do we do next? Well, we must realize the reality that life with Jesus is every day, every moment, and then delight to see the ways He's willing to encounter us. We have misperceived reality for far too long, I fear. We think of it as long, future-oriented, working along a continuum, when all of those are almost irrelevant. Life, like eternity, is now. Who we are is who we are now. How we follow Him is how we're following Him now. It is today's experience that matters with Him, really never tomorrow's. In fact, I'll put it to you this way. Imagine if there are 10 conversations He'd like to have with you before bedtime tonight. And imagine if you are looking for those. Well then, what sort of day are you going to have? And then how will you wake up expectant tomorrow? Hear Peter once more. He has, by His own action, given us everything that is necessary for living the truly good life, in allowing us to know the One who has called us to Him. Or more simply put, friends, we have everything today.